Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing this fine day?
I'm in a giggly mood, you can tell.
Hey, because the inventors must be here.
The inventors are here, back for a second time, Lee. You know, there are
only... be a regular segment.
There's only two things that get me excited.
Kenny Rogers.
And the inventors.
Exactly.
Hey, by the way, my iPod now is only 30% Kenny Rogers.
Wow.
Because it's like 20% all of my little podcasts I've been listening to.
There's quite a few.
Sorry, Kenny. And I'm thinking I might be a little bit more country than I thought.
Really?
Yes. That's what makes me giggle, is all those country western songs. I realize life is great, you know? Life is really good compared to all the songs. Anyway, Lee, we've got a great roundup today. A lot of incredible inventors and, gosh, creative minds with incredible credentials. First, I'd like to introduce Dave Savage. Dave comes to us from the Georgia Inventors Association. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Dave.
Good morning, Amy. Sometimes the group is also called the Inventors Association of Georgia, but we go by both names.
Well, that's good to know. You know, I got a little creative with the name, didn't I?
Well, our website is georgiainventors.com, and so that is confusing for some people.
Tell us a little bit about the organization.
Well, the inventors have been around for 30 years, and we are one of the oldest and one of the largest inventors groups around the country, and we are a member-led group, and we are there to support and encourage and motivate ourselves and our members, and we are a great resource to each other.
How often do you meet?
Well, we meet monthly. We are on the fourth Saturday of the month in the morning, and people are there for about 4 hours. Our meetings officially start at 10 a.m., but we encourage people to come as early as 8:30 or 9 when we're setting up, because that's where the networking between the members is so very important and so very valuable. They stay also late for lunch, and we meet at the Ryan's restaurant in Norcross on Jimmy Carter Boulevard. But if they email to us or call, we will add them to our email list, and they will get all the details to keep in front of them and on their computer.
How many inventors show up?
We have currently we have an average of 60 to 80 people who show up on our monthly meetings, and the energy is sky high. And because the inventors are a personality type, we all have many, many inventions and ideas beyond the one that we're already working on, and we've all been on many journeys and therefore have gathered lots and lots of information that we eagerly support and share with others who have come along.
So it's very collaborative?
Absolutely. You know, we have a wide variety of people who come. There are some people who don't even have an idea yet, or just looking to share their knowledge with others because they've been perhaps an entrepreneur in the past, and some people are looking for something to do, and others have products already in the market, and we have a whole lot of people who are professionals who support us with their professional skills. We have people who are patent agents and patent attorneys and prototype builders and people who are knowledgeable in all kinds of things, and that's really important because so many people are designing products based on the materials or manufacturing methods or the things that they've learned, and it's not the whole truth yet.
How long have you been a member?
I've been involved for about 4 years, and so this year I'm the VP, and last year I was the president, and before that I was co-president, and I'm very selfish about why I do these things, because it's all about me, and the more I give, the more I get, and that gives me an opportunity to meet all kinds of amazing people and be here interviewing with Amy Otto and enjoying this very much and learning and connecting.
You have some really interesting interests. I just want to ask you a little bit about the landscape plants and your rescuing of demolition materials.
Well, there's a whole world of people out there who are eagerly trying to change the landscape from homes and one piece of property to another. And not only do I keep track of materials that I need for my own uses, but part of my connecting philosophy is to make a higher and better use of the materials that are out there. So not only do I create things for gardens for myself, but at my congregations and with friends and community gardens and Habitat for Humanity. So a plant most often plants, except for a Japanese maple, all get wiped away with the tractor. They have no time or energy to dig them up. And I just keep track of sites and not only building materials for beams and light switches and all kinds of things. So
your mind is always thinking.
My mind is constantly going. I have a 4-page long to-do list at 9-point type.
Wow. Wow. And you also have a website. Can you please give everybody the website to learn a little bit more about the word tipster?
Well, the website is something that's working on at the moment. So it will be referencepublishers.com, but I expect to have it up next month. But the product is on the way, and I am a bit of a guru in the world of Microsoft Word, keyboard shortcuts, hidden features you wish you knew or could remember. And there's a whole lot of things that are built into Word for everyday users that people just can't remember or didn't know what it could do and are so frustrated with it. And so I've created a tutorial product that really incorporates the things that are most frustrating for people and makes their life so much easier. An example would be bullet points. Normally, if you go with the traditional way, you have a two-space gap between your bullet point and your text. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of codes that are embedded for your check marks and your dots and all the rest. And in fact, so one of the easy ones is Alt-7. Hold down the Alt key and click on the number 7 on your keypad, and that will give you your traditional center dot for your bullet point.
That's a hot tip there. I think people can probably find out a lot more hot tips when they look at your product, too.
Absolutely. And so maybe the next time I come by, we'll have it already out in the market, but it's exciting. And one of the nice things about it is it can be private labeled for companies who want to give away something to their clients that will be truly useful or as a fundraising for schools instead of gift wrap or popcorn or something like that.
Excellent. I love that. I love that. So, Dave, how can people reach you?
The easiest way, my website is pretty easy, or actually my email is pretty easy, dave@davesavage.com. Savage is SAVAGE. So that will get me directly to me, and I will email to them, and they respond with a complete information sheet about our meetings and what were time and place, etc. Plus, I will send them a list of 170 websites all related to being an entrepreneur or an inventor. And it extends from the professional magazines to the universities and all kinds of organizations and blogs that are all geared towards supplying information. So,
and that's free?
It's free. And so that way we capture their email for reminders of meetings. And some people just enjoy getting the news. Every time I send out a newsletter, I add to that list of emails and great sites or events that I find. So it's worthwhile opening up our emails at every instance.
Terrific. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today. And thank you for bringing the incredible guests that you have. We also have with us today Bob Schwartzel. And Bob, you're an interesting guy, my goodness, a PhD in physical organic chemistry, 30 years of experience in research and development. I mean, you've taught at a bunch of universities, Ohio State, University of Georgia, Georgia Tech. Am I getting that wrong? Gwinnett Technical College. I mean, the list goes on and on. You're married. It sounds like you have a wonderful life and a lot of knowledge to share with us today. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Bob.
Thanks, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us, how do you get from organic chemistry to where you are today?
Well, my whole interest, my whole career has been really solving problems. Research and development has been done for me, has been in a contract research environment, which is really like consulting on steroids in a way. You're sort of doing problem solving for clients through a large organization, but ultimately your salary and your whole support has to be generated by writing proposals and cultivating clients. So it's the same process that one does in consulting, but you do it through a large organization that provides facilities and something of a flywheel for the downtimes when you might be between projects for a little while. So I was with an organization called Battelle, B-A-T-T-E-L-L-E, located in Columbus, Ohio, for 20 years. Battelle is an interesting organization. They are one of the largest contract research organizations in the world, although most people have never heard of them. Their claim to fame is that they developed a technology that made Xerox a practical process. They didn't invent xerography, but they made a number of inventions and contributions that made it a commercial product. They also, just as an example, to show you the breadth of things that they get involved in, they invented the rollers for Pringles potato chips.
Wow.
And they invented the process for making the laminated metal sandwich that goes into U.S. quarters and other coins. So it's an organization that has several thousand people. They currently run a number of national laboratories, including Pacific Northwest Laboratories, Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and the National Renewable Energy Research Laboratory in Colorado. So that gave me the opportunity to sort of do my own thing. You know, I was hired into Battelle to work on a project on chemical storage of solar energy. And from there, I got involved in other aspects of photochemistry, which is the interaction of light and matter. And my whole career really has sort of focused on that. I love color. You know, I love to look at pretty things. And so by working with photochemistry, I got to play with pretty solutions and pretty colors of light. And it was just fun to work with.
Neat.
So it's gotten me into laser chemistry. It's gotten me into fading of dyes. It's gotten me into solar energy storage. And more recently, for the last 15, 20 years or so, in various types of optical devices and optical chips that can steer and manipulate beams of light, kind of the way an ordinary electronic chip manipulates beams of electrons.
You see my eyes light up over here?
That's interesting.
Because you know I'm going to start to talk about liquid chromatography, tandem mass spectrometry.
You're speaking my language.
Yeah, I know I am. I know, but that's a separate conversation. What is your affiliation with the Georgia Inventors Association? Let's see, how many times can I rename it?
Every time, just switch one word.
What's your involvement?
I've been a member of the Georgia Inventors Association for about a year and a half now, and I joined at the recommendation of a mutual friend who had been involved with the organization and thought it was a good thing to be a part of. And as Dave mentioned, I've found it to be a great resource, not only for stimulating my own thoughts, but for meeting a whole bunch of interesting people and quite frankly, making connections to several current clients in my own consulting business now. Now, after I was at Battelle, I was at Georgia Tech Research Institute for several years, and then at a small company called Microcoding Technologies that had spun out of Georgia Tech. And then for the last 5 years or so, I've had my own consulting business, Technology Guidance Services, LLC, that works with clients to help them improve their product development and product commercialization processes. And The client list I have ranges from individual inventors who I've met largely through the Georgia Inventors Association all the way up to multinational corporations. And so it's been a great thing for me, both personally through making friends and connections and professionally through meeting clients and getting ideas for projects.
So now you're working on multiple things at the same time?
Right now I've got five current projects, one fairly large project for a multinational corporation here in the Atlanta area that's involved in contact lens manufacturing, down to several smaller companies and individual inventors, mostly in the Atlanta area, but one client in Boston, in fact, who was referred to me by a mutual friend who lives in that area.
So what would be one hot tip you have for all those listeners that have these inventions in their mind going round and round?
Do they need a PhD?
No, you don't need a PhD. What you do need is the ability to step back and look really squinty-eyed at your idea and try to fall out of love with your idea for just a few seconds. It's very easy to get so enamored with your invention that you are convinced the world is going to beat a path to your door. And it's really important to step back, look at what's out there in the marketplace, and think about who might really buy this thing. If you're going to try to sell it directly to consumers or clients in a retail sense, maybe much the way Dave is working on his current invention, then you need to first of all know what the competition is in the marketplace. If you're interested in licensing your technology to some company to then develop and sell, which is what I tend to focus on in my own business, you need to not only do that step, but then, in addition, you need to really think about where this product might fall into that company's product line. Because really, nobody's going to be interested, no matter how great your product is, unless it opens a path to more profits and more money for that company. And if you're licensing, then that company becomes your customer. And so if it simply cannibalizes their existing product line, chances are they're not going to be interested. But if it improves their market share, if it opens a new path for them to compete in the marketplace without disrupting their current sales, then you have a chance of getting their attention.
How do you get their attention to have that conversation?
Pick up the phone. I mean, quite frankly, it's as simple as going to the website, rummaging around until you find a list of officers, and I usually try to start with the CEO or vice president of marketing or development. And just make a bunch of phone calls until you wade through all the all the voicemails and all of the callback messages, and until you get a human being on the phone, try to give them a 25-cent version of what you're thinking about, and either they'll ask for a PowerPoint presentation or some more descriptive information, or they'll simply say, no thanks, it doesn't meet our interest. Or they might refer you to the appropriate person within the company.
So you start at the top?
I start at the top because I want to work with decision makers. There are a lot of people in companies who have a vested interest in saying no to protect their own positions.
Right.
But if you can get the attention of the decision maker at the top of the process, then they can help drive it down into the company.
And it saves you time, right?
It saves time, it saves energy, it saves hassle. And as Dave has just pointed out to me also, you can also meet these folks quite productively at trade shows. If you can get to a relevant trade show, that's a real good venue for meeting some of these people and also getting a good idea for what your competition is.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I know you're an avid boater.
Yes.
So tell us, how can people reach you to obtain your service? So maybe you can just retire soon and boat. Just
right. Well, when I'm, yeah, the plan is in about 3 years to be floating in the Bahamas somewhere.
I like that.
But until that happens, I can be reached through my business email and website. The business, again, is Technology Guidance Services, and the website is the abbreviation of that, tgsproducts.com. My email is bobs@tgsproducts.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today. And if you're interested in learning more about Bob's company, please look at the website. Also joining us this morning, thank you, we have Alan Hess. Alan is an inventive mind. I think he was back. He visited us, 8 months ago?
During the last inventor show.
With the airline booties, which I've seen all over the place. So it's obviously been a successful invention with the airline booties. You have something else to talk to us about today, I understand, called the Rapkin.
I do. Thank you for having me back.
Tell us about the Rapkin.
Rapkin is not a product that I invented, but similar to what we just heard, someone that we know through friends of friends, we were contacted by a person, Albert, who had created this idea called the Rapkin. It's a very simple product. It's basically a napkin that will wrap around your drink in a glass or a beer can or at a bar or any kind of festival where the glass or the bottle is sweating. Most people put a wrap around a napkin. That's how the name came about. And that tends to disintegrate and cause a bit of a mess, and you throw out three or four of them and before you usually finish your drink. Albert came up with the idea to have a brandable napkin that would wrap around the drink and not disintegrate. He brought that idea to us, and my partners and I worked to get a product prototype for him, and that's what we have.
So let's talk a little bit about the process. I know with the airline booty and then also with the Rapkin, you have some experience in, you know, from start to finish.
Right, taking a product from an idea all the way to, I guess, overseas to get it made.
And each one is kind of different. You have to kind of look at them. It's not a one-size-fits-all, as I'm sure everybody else here knows already. You kind of have to look at the product, as we just talked about. You look at the competition. You look and see what's out there. One of the things my partners and I always say is a phrase we came up with, we think, is, you know, what else is out there that's good enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of it may not be that exact product, but if there's something that's good enough, is that going to, you know, destroy your market potential?
So that could be a deal killer right there?
Could be. We've had a few people bring ideas to us. We did the analysis of what else is out there, and there was not an identical product, but we found things that we thought were good enough.
And
we brought that back to the inventor, and as they did their research and their analysis, in the two cases I'm thinking of, both inventors decided not to go forward with the product.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that you educate and empower your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we try to do. I mean, obviously, we want to work with them and help them bring a product to market. What my partners and I do is sales and marketing and business consulting, but we also have an arm that has a capacity to make products overseas, manufacturing arm. So for our own airport booties, we have them manufactured overseas and imported into the U.S. In the case of the Rapkin, we are having them produced overseas and brought into the U.S. again, and different manufacturer, but the same idea. So where people need to have product made, that we have a conduit to do that.
Okay. Excellent.
Where most people don't have that that skill or those contacts and the ability to bring a product in from overseas. As most people here at the table will know, it's not an easy process. You just don't call up 1-800-OVERSEAS-DELIVER. Doesn't work that way.
And you just fax them a picture and then they make it for you.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
If only it were that easy, right?
Exactly. One email.
That's all it takes.
So tell us a little bit about your company. You consult right?
Sure.
Okay, so if I had an invention, had an idea, I would come to you, and what would you do for me again?
Well, normally we have an initial meeting just to understand and get to meet the people, and they get to meet my partners and I. You always want to work with people you know have a good feeling about, so we try to meet with the inventor or the product owner. And then we just kind of try to understand what it is that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an initial conversation with them to see is it real or not, you know, kind of kick the tires on both sides. They get to meet us and see if we're, you know, good enough for them and have the right skill set that they're looking for. And we look to see if it's something we have an opportunity to really get involved in and work with and make some money on. Quick background on my partners and myself. All three of us have a background 25 plus years each in sales and marketing. In different industries, in technology. One of my partners actually worked for Kimberly-Clark in the paper industry, so that made this relatively easy for us. And a third partner also in the telephony industry and also consulting for Anderson before Anderson went away. So we all have creative sales marketing minds trying to figure out how do you bring a product to market? What do you need to do to get there?
Mm-hmm.
What's the competitive issues? You know, the old, for those that went to the B-school world, you know, the Porter model, right? What are the barriers to entry? What's the costs? What are the competition? And then we look at some of the things such as trademarks and patents and how do you protect an idea and bring things forward.
I can't wait to get to that segment of the show. The best is yet to come, right? All these great ideas, but they have to be protected. So, Alan, anything new coming up? Is your mind spinning? Actually, I've got a great question for you. What's the first thing you ever invented? Were you like eight and invented something crazy you want to tell us about?
You know, I probably did. I don't remember exactly what it was. I remember being about eight, and my neighbors always thought that I was going to grow up to be an engineer because I was the kid always playing with the Erector set and the chemistry sets and always, unfortunately, not blowing anything up, but always building something, trying to figure out how to use the Erector set a little different than the instructions that came with it.
Yeah, that's just a starting point.
That's a starting point. So I don't know what I created back then, but I'm sure my mom and dad have pictures of it somewhere. But, yeah, it started about that time, just kind of building things and trying to put things together and see what happens.
So that's got to be very stimulating. I mean, just your mind always going. What do you do to decompress?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I try to sleep, which doesn't seem to work for well. I probably go between 4 and 5 hours a night, which is probably not nearly enough if you speak to a medical professional, and they'll tell you that I'm probably crazy. But, you know, I just try to I do things with friends. I go to movies. I go to theater and just kind of – or, you know, bike or try to do some running or something like that just to kind of clean the mind out and not think about anything.
Are you looking to create your own stuff now, or are you focused more on helping other people take things to market?
We're actually doing both. Again, my partners and I are pretty creative. We are also problem solvers. We tend to look at things in the industry or different industries and see what's going on. That's how we came up with the booties, the airport booties product. We didn't have a background in that arena, but we saw an opportunity, researched it, and brought the product out. We are continuing to do that. We have a couple things that were a little early stage drawing board kind of stuff that I'm not really ready to talk about because they're not far enough along to see if they'll be real or not. But we have other things that were, again, through contacts and friends and just people who know us or seen us through the airport booties that have been around the country now. They come to us and ask us questions and ask us if we could work with them. And, again, that's how we came up with working with Albert and his Rapkin idea.
Mm-hmm.
He could not get it manufactured in the U.S., had all sorts of issues on cost and ability to manufacture it, was introduced to us. And in probably about 6 weeks, we were able to find a manufacturer to do it for maybe a third the cost he was being given and a better quality rate. So,
excellent. So, Alan, what's the best way for someone to reach you?
To reach me?
Mm-hmm.
The easiest thing is through our business website, sales@airportbooties.com. That's A-I-R-P-O-R-T, booties, B-O-O-T-I-E-S.com, sales@airportbooties.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So we've talked about all of these incredible ideas. You've got great, great things in your mind, but from conception to protection to reception in the marketplace, we bring to you today Ron Reardon. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Ron.
Hey, thank you, Amy.
But first, I've got to get something out of the way. We've got a lot of multiple things happening with you, and by multiple things, I mean your mother was a triplet, you have twin boys, and now I understand your son is expecting twins.
Boy and a girl.
Unbelievable.
In about 2 weeks.
So there's no doubt about the fact that that's genetic. Wow. Lots of multiples.
In all cases, it was the mother's fault.
Blame it on the woman. It's got to come somewhere. So right now you are the president of Patents and More, National Association of Patent Protections, right?
Patent Practitioners.
And the United Inventors Association. That's a lot of presidency.
Yeah, it keeps me busy.
I bet. I bet it definitely keeps you busy. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about your company. So
yeah,
tell us
what a patent agent is.
Well, patent agent and patent attorneys are the same with the patent office because we both take the same patent bar and we both have to have a science undergrad. Mine was physics. And we both have to have good moral character. And there's about 6,000 patent agents in the United States and about 26,000 patent attorneys. Patent agents can practice law only with the patent office. You know, a patent attorney, of course, would be a member of a state bar and they can, you know, practice law statewide. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a patent agent cannot write contracts or do trademark work or things like that that a patent attorney can do. Mm-hmm. But with the patent office, as far as representing clients with the patent office, patent agents, patent attorneys are exactly the same.
So they're seen the same way from the government?
Yes, from the government standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And what would be an advantage of a person using an agent over an attorney?
Usually price. patent agents are generally more cost-effective than attorneys. I tell people that you don't have to pay for the teak wood furniture and the marble floors and the high-rise office because most patent agents will work out at home.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. So what is a provisional patent?
Well, it's a misnomer to call it a provisional patent because it's a provisional patent application. And it does allow you to say patent pending for 1 year, mm-hmm. but it never, ever turns into a patent, okay, with issued patent rights. For that, you need what's called a non-provisional patent application that you can file within the year that the provisional patent application is pending and then claim priority to that date. But the non-provisional is what actually gets examined at the patent office and could potentially get claims allowed and become an issued patent so that you've got 20 years of protection.
So I have an idea. Where do I begin from the trademark and patenting perspective?
Well, what I always recommend for folks is to answer the question, will it sell mm-hmm. for a long time to a lot of people at a profit? And I send folks 41 questions where they can self-assess their invention. And, of course, they should, you know, get on the Internet and use some kind of search engine to find out, you know, does it already exist? And, you know, the very first question in the 41 questions I send folks is, you know, does it have a wow factor? Because if your invention is only 10% better than what's out there, then don't go there, okay? It really needs to be like what I say the DVD player was to the VCR, okay? Because people were using VCRs and like that. It took it something like 23 years for almost everybody to have a VCR. DVD player comes out, 3 years, you're at 90% penetration of the market because it was just like, whoa, I can skip forward and backwards. I can mm-hmm. see, you know, the director's cut, you know, and behind the scenes and all like that.
Interesting. So someone has an idea. What's the difference between a trademark and a patent and which one comes before the other?
Trademark is basically anything that lets you know the source of the goods or services that are being provided. Usually it's a word like Starbucks or Chick-fil-A or something like that. But it can also be a sound like the roar of the lion in the MGM movies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a patent is either covering the ornamental appearance of something, the way things look, or how it functions. One example I give is if you remember the Furby from many years ago,
mm-hmm.
it got a design patent on the way the Furby looked, so nobody could make anything that looked like the Furby. But it also got a utility patent for the animatronics that was inside the Furby that actually made it work. All the Star Wars toys got design patents, but something like Velcro got a utility patent.
Hmm.
Now, in today's world, with you hear so much about the pirating overseas. Like, how much real protection is it? When it seems like overseas they just knock off a given item.
When you get an issued patent here in the United States, it covers, gives you the right to prohibit others from making, using, selling, or importing that in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't cover, outside the country. For that, you'd need to file national patents in those countries and enforce it. But
how does the enforcement take place? I mean, having it is great, but then what do you do you have it?
You have to do your own enforcement. You have to be checking the radar and seeing if, your product is being exactly duplicated according to the claims. One of the famous cases recently was with BlackBerry. An inventor had gotten a patent on the process by which BlackBerry service works, between Canada and the United States. And then the RIM up in Canada started doing it. And the inventor went to him and says, look, here's my patent. You're violating it. Be glad to license it to you for $2 million. And they said, no. Well, when it finally ended up, the judge was one day away from totally shutting down BlackBerry service in the United States because they were infringing on the patent. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'd gone to court and patents had been examined and proved valid. And then they found RIM had to pay over $600 million to the inventor for the patent that they had been violating. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's kind of unusual, but right. It does happen.
But what happens more likely? Like, what's a more common scenario?
A more common scenario is somebody looks at a patent, okay, and they sit there and they look at the claims and they're like, okay, this thing says, you know, that this thing rotates 359 degrees. I'll make one that does 360 degrees, okay, and so I won't, you know, be violating their patent.
Okay? Mm. So that would be enough to not violate the patent?
Could be.
Wow. You
know, but folks will look at exactly what's in the claims and try to figure out some way around it, and that's why you need a real good patent agent or attorney to dialogue with the inventor and just say, okay, I know this is what your invention is, and I know this is what you want to sell, but if you were a competitor, what would you do to this in order to get around it? I know you don't want to do it,
right.
But what do you want others not to be able to do?
Right. So then that's where your expertise comes in to kind of protect them in ways that they don't, like they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
When you do.
Because I tell folks that I know you want to sell this now, but what do you want to sell in 2 years and three years and 4 years? Because your patent's going to be good. Let's put all this in there. Okay, and then so you're covered with what you're initially selling, and then you're covered with the next rollout and then the next rollout.
Interesting. So when someone approaches, you know, an idea and contacts you as an agent, what's the minimum amount of money that they need?
Well, it goes through stages. You know, like when I send them the 41 questions of will it sell, I do that complimentary because I like to screen my clients, and about half of the people I send that to never call me back because I'd have a threshold saying if you score 60 or more, call me. If you score less than 60, walk away from your mention. Okay,
bad idea.
So a lot of people don't call me. But then the next thing is to do what's known as a prior art search, is, well, has it already been invented? And I've for the prices on that vary. You know, my fee is $690, but you know, you can pay a couple thousand, or you can pay less than that out there. But it's to find out, you know, has it already been invented? And I've had to tell inventors, I know you just thought of this, but in 1994 it was patented. And in fact, you know, when I looked and saw that the inventor had assigned it to somebody and looked that up on the internet, I was like, here it is in a bag selling on the internet. I know you couldn't find it, but here it is.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I can't help you. It's been done. You know.
Right.
Okay. So do you help with prototyping?
I connect people with prototypers. That's part of the more part of patents and more is I do patents, okay? But if they need trademark work or copyright or prototypes or marketing or licensing, then I've developed connections over time where I'll just direct them to folks that's their expertise.
Mm-hmm. And what's the time frame involved?
Well, for if it's a design patent, you can probably get a design patent in about a year. Mm-hmm. If it's a utility patent, it's probably going to take 2 years or more. If you're in the business method area, it might be never, okay, because they've gotten very stringent about business method patents, and they take it at least 4 or 5 years now because they have to go through a second pair of eyes and all, mainly because of all the uproar about Amazon's one-click patent and should they have gotten it and things like that.
Well, now, speaking of that, now that they have it, is that something where they're going to be able to have that for the 20-year period of time?
Yeah. Yeah, even though everybody jumped up and down and complained, that patent's still in force. Amazon was able to keep Barnes & Noble from using One Click for two Christmas seasons, and finally Barnes & Noble just said, Amazon, run our site, okay, was their solution on that. I think since then, Barnes & Noble's now doing their own site. But
is that something where do they ever revisit that and say, you know what, we were a little hasty on that?
It can be revisited. That was one of the things that was done with the BlackBerry patents, is they revisited those. It's called a re-exam. Mm-hmm. And in that re-exam, some of the claims that had been allowed were disallowed, but others
stayed.
Okay, and those were the important claims that got the $600 million.
Right.
Wonderful. Gosh. We're running out of time, Lee.
Yeah.
How can people get in touch with you?
Okay. My website is patentsandmore.com. That's patentsandmore.com. And they can reach me by just info@patentsandmore.com.
I have to add one last thing, Lee.
What?
I got to love it when Ron puts down that he's married to a beautiful, talented lady from Mexico. I mean, and she's smart. I mean, he writes all this down. I got to love that.
See that?
Yeah.
You appreciate that, don't you?
I really do appreciate that. And he's smart. Wow. It's an incredible amount of knowledge, and I'd love to learn more. And for those of you that would like to learn more, please visit Ron on his website and engage his services. Thank you all so much for being a part of the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, and have a wonderful day.